ice cream, a thousand tiny signals in between. If risk can point us.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a second that you're walking into your doctor's office for a routine checkup.
Right, just a normal annual visit.
Exactly. They draw a single vial of blood, or maybe just swab your cheek. And from that one simple DNA test, they hand you a highly specific timeline of your future health.
Like a crystal ball, but biological.
Yeah. They look at the results and say, you know, you need to start screening for prostate cancer a full decade earlier than the standard guidelines recommend. Or they tell you to start taking a preventative heart medication right now, today, even though your cholesterol looks completely normal.
I mean, we've been chasing that specific vision of precision medicine for over two decades now. The whole idea that we can front load our healthcare system by catching risk before it ever actually manifests into disease.
And the wild part is the biological tools to do this already exist. We have the technology right now. It's called a polygenic risk score.
Right, the PRS.
Yeah. Think about how a bank calculates a financial credit score.
Right.
They don't just look at one massive financial event, right? They look at hundreds of tiny financial behaviors. A slightly late payment 5 years ago, your current credit utilization, the number of open accounts, and they aggregate all of that to calculate your overall financial risk.
It's a cumulative picture.
Exactly. A polygenic risk score works on that exact same principle, but for human health. It takes thousands of tiny genetic variants and combines them to calculate your lifetime risk for specific complex diseases.
But the bottleneck holding this back is no longer the genetics. I mean, the science is largely solved.
Right.
The bottleneck is the economics. Can our heavily burdened, resource-strapped healthcare systems actually afford to deploy it?
That is the multi-billion dollar question. And to explore whether we can actually afford to bring this into the clinic, today we celebrate the work of Leonardo Maria Siena and the incredible team at Sapienza University of Rome who have advanced our understanding of the economics behind precision medicine.
Yes, we are doing a deep dive into their 2025 systematic review, which was published in the American Journal of Human Genetics. They decided to look past all the technological hype and, well, rigorously follow the money.
Because following the money is the only way this gets out of the lab. I mean, over the last decade, the cost of gene sequencing has absolutely plummeted. We went from the Human Genome Project costing billions to sequencing a whole genome for the price of a decent pair of noise-canceling headphones.
It's incredible. Genomic data is suddenly everywhere. But taking that raw data and seamlessly integrating it into routine clinical practice, that's hitting a massive wall of reality.
What kind of wall? Like IT infrastructure?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Healthcare systems globally lack the IT infrastructure to securely store and dynamically analyze that volume of data. Plus, we are facing a severe personnel shortage.
Like genetic counselors.
Exactly. We need professionals to translate these complex probabilistic scores to everyday patients. And above all of that, there is a desperate need to prove cost effectiveness.
Right, because public health systems and insurance models don't just fund cool science.
No, they don't. You cannot introduce a new widespread diagnostic tool unless you can mathematically prove that it saves money or significantly improves health outcomes over the long term. That is the major hurdle for polygenic risk scores.
So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
By aggregating thousands of independent single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs, a PRS, quantifies a person's complex disease predisposition. But are we using these scores to, like, treat sick people or to screen healthy people before they get sick?
Well, it's evaluated across the whole spectrum. There's a massive economic difference between using a PRS to screen a completely healthy population of millions just to find a few high-risk individuals versus using it on a small group of people who are already sick to figure out which specific chemotherapy will work best.
Right, the clinical utility changes the math completely.
It does, and the Sapienza University team captured that entire spectrum. To figure out where the math actually works, they utilized the PRISMA methodology to filter the noise.
Well, they cast a massive net.
A huge net. They pulled 2,183 records from major scientific databases, searching for any study that married polygenic risk with formal economic evaluation.
Over 2,000 papers. That's a lot of reading.
But they filtered it down to just 24 full economic evaluations.
Wait, really? Out of over 2,000 published papers hyping up the clinical potential of this technology, only 24 actually evaluated the economics properly.
Yeah, just 24.
That highlights a massive blind spot in translational science. I mean, we pour billions of dollars of grant money into engineering these incredible genomic tools, but we completely forget to calculate the downstream bill for the hospital trying to use them.
The disparity is striking, you know. However, those 24 papers that made the final cut were exceptionally rigorous. Most of them were cost-utility analyses, or CUAs.
Okay, what makes a cost-utility analysis so rigorous?
They're sophisticated models that don't just look at raw dollars spent. They weigh the financial cost against a metric called QALYs, quality-adjusted life years.
Ah, QALYs. Let's break down the QALY math for the listener, because it's kind of the engine of these economic models. A QALY assigns a numerical value to a year of life based on the quality of that health.
Exactly. So 1 year in perfect health equals 1.0.
But a year spent going through severe chemotherapy or managing chronic heart failure might only equal, say, 0.5 or 0.6.
Right. The models are trying to calculate how much money it costs the healthcare system to buy the patient one full, perfectly healthy year of life.
And were these 24 studies actually good at calculating that?
Very good. The quality check on these studies was highly stringent. The researchers applied the Quality of Health Economic Studies checklist, which scores each paper out of 100. 11 of the 24 studies scored a 90 or above.
Wow, so the pool of data is narrow, but the depth and reliability of that data is formidable.
Exactly. To make sense of it all, the researchers categorized the studies based on clinical utility into three buckets: cancer, cardiovascular disease, and other diseases.
Let's look at the cancer data first, because it makes up the bulk of the review, right? 16 of the 24 studies landed here.
Yep, covering prostate, colorectal, and breast cancer. In the cancer arena, PRS is fundamentally used defensively.
Defensively, like as a tool to optimize existing screening programs.
Precisely. Deciding exactly who gets a mammogram or a colonoscopy and when they get it. Take prostate cancer, for example, which had 6 dedicated studies.
And what did they find?
4 of those 6 concluded that PRS-based screening is highly cost-effective. The standard of care right now relies heavily on the PSA blood test.
But the economic flaw with the PSA test is its notorious rate of false positives.
Exactly. A high PSA leads to an expensive, invasive prostate biopsy. Often, that biopsy reveals a slow-growing cancer that would have never harmed the patient in their lifetime.
Which leads to overdiagnosis and costly, unnecessary treatments.
But by introducing a PRS as an initial filter, doctors can stratify who actually needs that PSA test and subsequent biopsy. You spare the healthcare system the cost of unnecessary procedures, and you spare the patient the physical toll.
That makes total sense.
Duh.
But the economics get complicated fast when you look at breast cancer.
They really do.
One study in the review looked at using a PRS to estimate the risk of recurrence in women with early stage breast cancer to guide whether they needed adjuvant chemotherapy. The math there was brilliant.
Because chemotherapy is astronomically expensive and highly toxic.
Right. So using a genetic score to confidently tell a patient you can safely skip chemo generates massive cost savings and preserves a huge number of QALYs.
But another study completely flipped the script. It compared PRS-based screening against screening guided by artificial intelligence.
Oh, wow. And who won?
The economic model found that the PRS screening was actually inferior to the AI-guided approach.
That is fascinating from a cost perspective.
Mm.
And the mechanism behind why the AI won is pretty simple when you think about it. An AI model analyzing breast tissue density usually runs on mammograms that the hospital has already taken.
Right. The image exists. The sunk cost is paid.
Exactly. The marginal cost to run an algorithm over that image is basically just the electricity for the server compute.
Mm-hmm.
A polygenic risk score, on the other hand, requires a brand new physical workflow.
You have to draw blood, ship it to a lab, run it through a sequencer, pay a genetic counselor to interpret it.
The AI had a massive economic head start because it leveraged existing infrastructure.
That perfectly illustrates why biological elegance does not automatically equate to public health efficiency. A tool must fit the logistical reality of the clinic.
That's a great point.
Now, if we shift from defensive screening in cancer to proactive treatment in the second category, cardiovascular disease, the economic narrative changes dramatically.
This was the most consistent success story in the entire systematic review, wasn't it?
Yes. There were 5 studies focusing on CVD.
Here's where it gets really interesting. In cardiovascular disease, the math shifts because we aren't just screening for the sake of monitoring. We are proactively altering the treatment plan.
Exactly. The PRS is used specifically to refine a patient's eligibility for preventive therapies, most notably statins.
Standard cholesterol meds. So currently, cardiologists rely on standard risk equations like the American Heart Association guidelines.
Right, which factor in your cholesterol levels, blood pressure, age, smoking status, you know, to decide if you need a statin.
Those equations are good, but they are blunt instruments.
Very blunt. But by incorporating a coronary artery disease, PRS, into those existing guidelines, the studies consistently demonstrated high cost effectiveness.
I mean, a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, is catastrophic for the patient and astronomically expensive for the healthcare system. An ER visit, surgery, cardiac rehab, lifelong care, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars.
While a daily statin is a cheap generic pill, using a PRS to identify the hidden high-risk patients and putting them on a cheap pill to prevent a massive hospital bill, that is the definition of compounding economic return.
The review also looked at a third category, other diseases, which included type 2 diabetes and primary open-angle glaucoma. The diabetes studies are critical, I think, because they highlight the difference between a computer simulation and real life.
Right, like that Finnish study. They didn't just build a spreadsheet. They tracked a massive real-world cohort of 313,000 individuals.
A sample size of 313,000 moves the data out of the realm of theory and into hard epidemiological evidence.
It definitely does. And they found that PRS-based prevention programs for type 2 diabetes were still highly cost-effective, even with the friction of the real world.
Which brings us to the obvious tension here. If the cardiovascular data is consistently positive, and if massive real-world cohorts show it works for diabetes, why is this not standard of care? Why isn't my doctor giving me a PRS test for my heart right now?
To understand the gap between these successful models and current clinical practice, we have to examine the structural limitations of the economic models themselves.
Okay, so the Finnish study was an exception.
A very rare exception. The vast majority of these 24 economic evaluations rely entirely on hypothetical cohorts.
Using Markov models or microsimulations, right?
Exactly. A Markov model is essentially a mathematical framework. It simulates a population moving through distinct health states over time.
So it models a hypothetical patient transitioning from healthy to diseased to treated to deceased, calculating the accrued costs and QELYs at every transition.
Yes, but the entire model rests on the transition probabilities, the assumptions the researchers program into the math.
And what's the biggest assumption they make?
The most glaring assumption built into almost all of these models is 100% adherence. The math assumes that every single person offered the genetic test will gladly take it, and that every physician will flawlessly execute the resulting clinical guidelines.
But human behavior ruins the perfect math every time. In reality, behavioral economics plays a massive role. There is significant resistance to genetic testing.
Oh, massive resistance.
People have deep privacy concerns about handing their DNA over to a massive health system. They worry about life insurance discrimination.
Right. If your Markov model assumes 100% uptake, but the real-world acceptance rate is closer to 30%, your projected cost savings evaporate instantly.
Because the fixed costs of setting up the screening program remain, but the volume of prevented disease drops off a cliff.
Exactly. But beyond behavioral resistance, there is a structural data issue that threatens to completely invalidate these economic models for a diverse population.
Ah, the ancestry blind spot.
Yes. Across almost all the studies reviewed, ethnicity and ancestry were rarely factored into the cost-effectiveness equations.
Because polygenic risk scores are heavily calibrated on genome-wide association studies that overwhelmingly sampled people of European descent.
Exactly. The genetic architecture of complex diseases varies. Allele frequencies differ across populations. A specific cluster of SNPs that accurately predicts heart disease risk in someone of European descent might not carry the same predictive weight in someone of African, Asian, or indigenous descent.
It might be completely absent, which creates an immediate logistical and economic nightmare.
A total nightmare. If a national healthcare system rolls out a PRS screening tool based on European data across a diverse population, the model misfires.
It generates false positives for some groups and misses high-risk individuals in others.
And not only do you risk widening global health disparities by providing inaccurate medicine to minority populations, but the economic rationale collapses. You are paying for a diagnostic tool that is statistically broken for a large percentage of your patients.
That structural bias is a silent cost. But the researchers also pointed out that these models completely ignore the loud, obvious costs of actually putting this into practice.
The implementation costs. They measure the price of the genetic test panel and the price of the statin, but they ignore everything else.
Right. Expanding laboratory sequencing capacity to handle millions of routine DNA samples requires immense capital.
Integrating genomic data into legacy electronic health record systems requires custom IT development. You have to train thousands of general practitioners.
You cannot simply hand a family doctor a specialized report detailing 10,000 SNPs and expect them to confidently translate that into a care plan without extensive paid clinical training.
You really can't. But applying these models universally hits an even harder wall when you look at how disease actually spreads across a population.
This is Jeffrey Rose's prevention paradox, right?
Yes, it's a classic epidemiological concept. It basically states that the bulk of sick people don't actually come from the high-risk pool.
So how does a highly targeted genetic test survive that paradox economically?
Well, Rose observed that a very large number of people exposed to a small risk will inevitably generate many more cases of a disease than a very small number of people exposed to a high risk.
Let's apply that math to polygenic risk scores. A PRS is phenomenally good at identifying the extreme tail end of the bell curve, right? The top 5% of the population at the highest genetic risk for a disease.
And finding and treating those individuals is highly beneficial for them personally.
But the paradox is that hospitals aren't filled exclusively with the top 5%. The sheer volume of heart attacks and cancers comes from the massive middle of the bell curve population, simply because that group is so incredibly large.
Exactly. Millions of people at a baseline 10% risk will mathematically produce far more total heart attacks than 10,000 people at a 50% risk.
Which forces a difficult conversation about return on investment.
It does. If a public health system spends hundreds of millions of dollars implementing a nationwide PRS screening program, it will successfully identify the genetic outliers, but it will inevitably miss the vast majority of disease cases.
Because those cases occur in people with normal genetic risk profiles, who develop illnesses due to poor diet, environmental exposures, or sheer biological bad luck. The total disease burden on the healthcare system remains largely unchanged.
Right, and when we calculate that total burden, I think it's important to push back on how these studies define a cost.
Oh, absolutely. These cost-utility analyses meticulously track lab fees, hospital bed days, and drug prices. But they don't have a spreadsheet column for the psychological toll.
The human element.
Exactly. If someone takes a PRS test at age 25 and discovers they have a sky-high genetic risk for early-onset Alzheimer's, they have to carry that invisible heavyweight around for decades. Does that severe anxiety not lower their real-world QALY score, even if the model ignores it?
The indirect societal and psychological costs are a massive blind spot in the literature, and the behavioral impact swings both ways. Consider the danger of false reassurance.
Oh, that's a huge one.
A patient receives a PRS report indicating a fantastically low genetic risk for cardiovascular disease. They misinterpret that as being genetically bulletproof.
Right, they see a low score, skip the gym, start smoking, and eat fast food every day. A low genetic risk does not make you immune to a terrible lifestyle?
No, it doesn't.
And if the false reassurance of a good score triggers behavioral backsliding that ultimately causes a heart attack, that is a severe negative health outcome directly caused by the test itself, something the microsimulation models are completely blind to.
We are attempting to map highly linear economic math onto highly irrational human behavior.
It's a tough fit.
So if we synthesize everything Leonardo Maria Siena and the Sapienza team uncovered in this systematic review, the central insight is clear. The underlying math of polygenic risk scores works.
It does. They show highly promising trends for making healthcare more proactive and cost-effective, particularly when used to target statin therapy and cardiovascular disease and refine cancer screening protocols.
But until researchers and policymakers account for the friction of human behavior, the staggering implementation costs, and the absolute necessity of diverse ancestral calibration, their true value remains a brilliant theoretical calculation, rather than a functional clinical reality.
It is like we've engineered a high-performance Ferrari engine, genomic science, but we haven't paved any roads or trained any mechanics, which is the healthcare infrastructure, to support it.
What does this mean for the future of your own personalized medical care?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
stack the numbers on a midnight screen. 1,000 tiny signals in between. If risk can point us where to start, can it save a system and a heart? But models live in perfect air, while real life moves in worn out care. What's the price of making change? And who gets seen inside the range? Is it worth the wait?
And the path to mark our loops might grow some worlds with paper trees.